Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City. Yes, folks, you know, we don't turn up wearing a cool baseball cap saying we witnessed the devastation firsthand when we didn't. We don't do that at all here on the NOLA Drinks Show. We just talk about the world of drink and food here in New Orleans and beyond. But do want to talk about that, obviously, friends. As we know, since last week's show, a lot has happened. And unfortunately for our neighbors to the west over in Texas in the Houston area, we all know this, Hurricane Harvey has just brought an unimaginable amount of havoc, actually, we can imagine, here in New Orleans. And, you know, what that city and that area did for us just over 12 years ago was something, and it's time for us to pay it back. And there are numerous ways you can do so. Obviously, here on the NOLA Drink Show, friends, we talk about, you know, our emphasis here is on drink and food. So a few of those things that I want to mention, there are some different efforts to coming from the hospitality industry, as you might imagine, to help out folks over there. And let me go over some of these with you. Of course, I'm not telling you how to give or how much to give or to whom to give, but all of these things I believe are very worthwhile charitable causes and people that will have effectiveness in what it is that they do and effectiveness with the dollars that you give to help. One of the things that can be done, Hurricane Harvey Hospitality Employee Relief Fund. I think we know here in the wake of Katrina that one of the most important things was getting our hospitality industry back up and running. In many instances, these people, as we know, many of the restaurants here were feeding people. So, you know, one can imagine that this is probably the case or going to be the case in Houston here in the coming days. So what you can do if you want the Hurricane Harvey Hospitality Employee Relief Fund, it's overseen by the Greater New Orleans Foundation. They are accepting direct donations online at www.gnof.org/give-now. Once again, www.gnof.org/give-now. And you can give money that way. And the fund is there to work with folks in Texas and the Houston Restaurant Associations for the state and for the city to identify those in the hospitality industry who need assistance, and in this case, monetary assistance. Another way that you can go about it, benefiting this group, all kinds of restaurants around town are serving as drop-off points for gift cards. Preferred gift cards would be things like Target, Home Depot, CVS, Lowe's, that sort of thing. Where people, you know, are going to immediately need these types of things. You know, of course, we're talking about cosmetics, you know, or toiletries, I should say, building supplies, these things. So, you know, try and keep it to that. If you go to, there's a Facebook page called Love from NOLA Facebook group. Some of the restaurants include Pizza NOLA, Cavan, St. James Cheese Company, Cafe Hope. There are a whole bunch of them that are actually, there's a good 20, 25 restaurants. It's started a couple days ago and goes until September 1st. Pick up a gift card, drop it off. Again, go check out Love from NOLA Facebook group. That's a good one. So there's a couple ways to help folks in the hospitality industry. Another one that I want to mention is our good friends with the LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group. They are the proprietors, of course, of Sylvain, Barrel Proof, Mobar, and Cavan, those four locations. They're giving away, began a couple days ago on Tuesday and going through Labor Day here on Monday, September 4th. All four properties are donating 20% of their sales to help out, and they're going to be giving their donations here to SBP, which is S as in Sam, B as in Boy, P as in Paul, USA.org, SBPUSA.org. Can check them out also, or go patronize the restaurants. I'll get to something related to that in a second, too, as it relates to us here. But what they seek to do at SBP is to help folks, you know, in the region. They're going to Texas. They're going to be helping out, of course, in Southwest Louisiana as well. They seek to shrink the time between disaster and recovery, which is obviously a crucial step. There's a lot of stuff that we know resources get pumped in. There's immediate alleviation that happens or attempts to make that happen. We know that. And then we start to get into the long, haul, the trudging through to get to recovery. We know that from Katrina. We know that from Isaac. We know that from the floods last year in the Baton Rouge area. It's an important step. SBP works to do that. So again, 20% of all proceeds, just off the bill right there, goes to from Cavan, Mobar, Barrel Proof, and Sylvain will go to benefit SBP. So go check them out. Patronize the restaurants. I'll get to some stuff about restaurants in just a second. Also, one more thing that I want to bring to your attention, our good friends at the Gulf Restoration Network, great organization working to protect our coastline, the culture connected to the coastline, the environment, of course, all of that stuff. They're just upstairs from us here at the station. Good bunch of people doing good work. They've put together a page. Their website is healthygulf.org. And if you go to their blog, look for Hurricane Harvey, How to Help posting, you'll find it on their homepage. Pretty easy. They have listed numerous worthwhile charities and relief groups that you can give money to that are really going to work. So for example, just right off the top here, there's a group in San Antonio that's involved. It's called Texas Diaper Bank. Monetary donations for relief kits for families with small children. Obviously a big deal here. Stuff for SPCA. Obviously we're going to have a lot of displaced animals, pets in these situations. Oftentimes, where do they go if they can't go to a shelter? These sorts of things. So quite a few things there. Port Light, which is a good organization. Folks helping out the homeless, the Houston Coalition for the Homeless is there. Trusted World, some other really good ones. So there's a good list. Go check that out at healthygulf.org blog, and then Hurricane Harvey, How Help is the address there. You'll find that pretty easily. So again, friends, I do urge you, please help as you can. Share stuff on your social media about where people can give. $5, $10, a $10 gift card, $25 gift card at Target, Home Depot, CVS for the gift card thing that we talk about. Give to your, hey, if you're into animals, go that way. Children, whatever it may be, let's help our friends to the west in the greater Houston area, of course, in Southeast Texas, and our friends in Southwest Louisiana that also are going to need some assistance. It's our obligation here to do so. Friends, I was talking a little bit about the restaurant business here in town, and we talk about this on the show quite a bit. It's been a tough summer, and we've talked about that quite a bit. The storm certainly does not help. It has kept people away on, some times that, people, hey, we need business during this time of year, and we depend on the locals getting out this time of year primarily, and that kind of caused, some problems. And it may not sound like much, two or three days of, here, obviously, we didn't get it too bad, fortunately, but it's enough to keep people inside, and two or three days of poor turnout at a restaurant, especially independent sit-down restaurants in these places, it's tough for these groups to absorb. So what I want to mention really is today, get out and patronize those folks. We're talking about, say, the LeBlanc Smith restaurant group giving 20% of their proceeds. That's hard. That's hard for them to do this time of year. It's not like, hey, this is just easy money to give away. It's really very difficult. That's going to cut deep to do that. They feel obliged to do that to help out victims of Hurricane Harvey. But today is the last day of culinary. And if you just go to culinary, C-O-O-L-I-N-A-R-Y, NewOrleans.com, you're going to see over 100 restaurants that are participating. Tonight's the last night. I got some good news coming up, though. And so what you can get is a three-course meal, a dinner for $39 or less. Well, lunch, by the time you hear this, is going to be over. And brunch is really kind of irrelevant, too. So we're talking about dinner. But lots and lots and lots of great restaurants participating. But here's the good news, okay? So, get out there tonight. They'd love to see you here on a Thursday evening. But Restaurant Week is coming up right here, September 11th, starts a week from this Monday. And it's a lot of the same folks that did culinary. It's the same group. The Convention and Visitors Bureau are really the guys behind all this. As a matter of fact, it's basically the same website. If you go to culinarynewOrleans.com, same deal. Three-course meal for no more than $39. In this case, yes, lunch, which two, sometimes more, but minimum, I believe, two courses. For $20, and brunch is the same thing, minimum three courses for $39. You can get all kinds of great deals going on out there. And a lot of the restaurants are the same folks, our good friends at Cavan, who we've just talked about. The Dickie Brennan restaurant groups are out there. Commander's Palace is out there. Best Steak, Bonefish Grill, Andy's Bistro over there in Jefferson Parish, and where they're Metairie, I think. Galatoire's, hey, if you haven't been there in a while, it's a great chance to go check them out. Cape Hall's, whole bunch of them. I'm not going to list them all, of course, but it's a lot of the same restaurants that participate in Culinary Month. And here's the good news. A lot of folks actually carry on their menu all the way through. So they don't even, you can still find those deals next week before restaurant week starts. So kind of got to go dig around a little bit on the culinary website to see who's doing that and then click on the restaurants and see if they've continued through. But I know in the past few years, since this has been going on, where we have culinary month in August and then we have restaurant week in September, folks say, hey, it's only 10, 11, 12 days, whatever it may be. Let's just leave all that good menu stuff out there. Friends, we've got a really good show for you coming up today. Hey, one thing, and we're going to talk about this right after the break. It's actually the one-year anniversary of the NOLA Drink Show, believe it or not. We're very happy to be here. We're going to talk a little bit about that here after the break. Coming up a little bit later on the show, we're going to talk whiskey. John Cashman with Irish Whiskey, brand ambassador there. We're also then going to talk with Hudson Whiskey, an independent producer. Han Sean from that group is going to talk with us, as well as Carlos Rios from Blue Nectar Tequila. And this kind of will wrap up our last round of interviews. I got one more segment that will run a little later with Reka Vodka, but all those great interviews that we did at Tales of the Cocktail, that's what we're going to do here today. But we're going to talk a little bit about the one-year anniversary of the NOLA Drink Show and a couple things going on around town right after the break, which is what we're going to do right now. Come on back.
It's 8:45 and I still got a little more time. I got to have it.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Baggio heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Now, if you ever been down to New Orleans, then you can understand just what I mean. Now, all through the week, it's quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night, they go from house to house. You don't have to pay the usual admission if you're a cook or a waiter or a musician.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Hey, thanks for tuning into the show here on, if you're listening on Thursday, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans, or if you're listening in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yes, certainly, go check out our podcast. I always appreciate that. It's a great way to get the show. We're on Google Play, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and I'm forgetting one. iTunes. There you go. That one. You can also get a streaming on TuneIn and Shoutcast, and we'll have some more streaming options on the way in the very near future. And please also want to mention, too, the stuff we were talking about in the previous segment about helping out our neighbors from Hurricane Harvey. You can go check out our Facebook page, which is pretty simple, NOLA Drinks, and we've posted three or four things there that are basically the stuff that I just talked about. So if you're looking for that restaurant to drop off the gift card between today and tomorrow, or you're looking for a link where you can go give to a worthwhile organization, that sort of thing, just go check out our Facebook page. I rolled through that pretty quickly, and that's all there. So links are there and all that stuff. And as more things emerge of worthy causes or things that we want to highlight in assisting our neighbors from Hurricane Harvey, we will post that there. So go check out the NOLA Drinks Facebook page. I appreciate that. Friends, big event this weekend. Hey, it's Labor Day. And what goes on? Yeah, Southern Decadence. You bet it does. Every year this weekend it happens. And, you know, a couple times we've had some really bad weather. We had the tropical storm a few years ago. I'm drawing a blank on which one. Was it Isaac? I can't remember. But it kind of wiped the whole event out. But hey, we're looking pretty good this weekend here. Things really kind of kicked off last night at midnight there on Bourbon Street. And it goes all the way through Labor Day. It's fun weekend. Obviously, it's focused around the French Quarter. If you're not familiar with Southern Decadence, it's an event that celebrates our good friends from the LGBTQ community, brings people in from from all over the world, really, that come to the event. And it's actually really good for business. Of course, we talk about how slow the summer can be. This is kind of another shot in the arm, like Tales of the Cocktail Wars, where we get a lot of people that come to town. They're excited to be here. They patronize our places. And the whole event is just an absolute hoot. It's a great time in town to go check out. Probably the highlight of the thing of the whole weekend is the parade that goes on on Sunday. And I'm chuckling because some of the stuff, this is definitely an adults-only parade. Okay, so don't bring the kids. This is not family-friendly Mardi Gras uptown. This is adults-only type stuff. But that's at 2 o'clock, goes through the quarter. It's going to kick off on Decatur and Barrack Street right there at the U.S. Mint. And then it's going to work its way, goes north away from the river for a couple blocks, hangs a left, goes up Royal, and then is going to make a turn on St. Louis. So, you know, goes 7-8 blocks there on Royal Street, makes a turn going north again on St. Louis, heads out briefly to Rampart, cuts back in on Toulouse, kind of wends its way back out to Rampart, then makes a right heading south again towards the river on St. Anne, and then briefly goes down, down Bourbon Street for about a block and ends right there. And I believe it ends at a particular venue, and I don't have that information in front of me. But there you go. That's where the parade ends, and that's a lot of fun. 2 o'clock on Sunday. Check that out, friends. Hey, friends, as I mentioned, this is essentially the one-year anniversary of the NOLA Drink Show. It has been an absolute pleasure and honor, really, to bring the show to you every week. I want to say a couple things, if I may, about that. One is a debt of gratitude that I have. The show would not exist without my good friend, Tim McNally. And if you probably know Tim's show, if you listen to the podcast only, you can check out Tim's show. It's Monday through Wednesday and Friday, same time slot, 3 to 5 p.m. here in New Orleans. And you can go to the WGSO.com website and get the podcast there from Tim. But Tim has been a real mentor to me. I started out doing this basically almost on a lark. He asked me to fill in for him going back about 3 or so years ago, maybe a little longer than that, when he was going out of town. I have become his regular fill-in when he travels, which he does a lot, for wine competitions, wine judging events, these sorts of things. And then he helped me get my own show, which is, of course, here, the NOLA Drink Show. I appreciate that. As a nod to that, at the top of the show, we still actually refer to it as the Dine, on the radio anyway, the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. It's the NOLA Drink Show, same thing. And Tim's show is the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show. So special thanks to Tim McNally. I wanted to mention that. And again, friends, it has been an absolute privilege to bring this show to you. As we like to say, we explore the world of drink and food in New Orleans and beyond, and that's what we do. What do we mean by that? You know, certainly we talk about different things on the show, and we talk about drink and food, okay, first and foremost. Now, some of you may hear sometime, I may even rub you the wrong way, okay? This is not a political show. Sure, I come out of the gate often and make 45 jokes. We've been doing that for the past 2 or 3 months. It's not going to stop. It writes itself. I'm just telling you. But anyway, you know, there's that part of things. It's important to me. My background is such that I actually worked in nonprofits for the better part of a decade, environmental nonprofits specifically. I did coral reef and marine protected area work, largely in the developing world and around the United States where we have coral reef environments. And yeah, you know, the social component to these things, the economic component to these things is very important to me. And the hospitality, the food and drink industry, all that stuff, service industry, hospitality industry, same thing. You know, there are social components that are important here. You know, we talk about issues of race in the industry. We talk about LGBTQ issues in the industry, gender issues in the industry, all of these things in the liquor industry, all of this kind of stuff, how environmental considerations. When we talk about, say, something like mezcal, it comes from agave, which is a limited natural resource. There are cultural ways of life connected to our food and our drink, and cultural traditions, norms, all of this kind of stuff. We like to talk about that on this show. I find that it's very important, and I've been given that platform, yes, and the privilege to be able to do that, and I want to make sure I take advantage of that. So again, if I rub you the wrong way, sometimes I apologize for that, but hey, I want to bring some of these things to your attention. I think that they're important. A lot of us who are into the world of drink and food find these things important, and really you should should too, I think. So that's why we're going to continue to talk about it here on the show, and I appreciate having that opportunity. Now, I always do try and bring it back more or less to drink and food whenever it's possible. Occasionally, things are a little bigger than that, or I can't quite do that, but that's the gist here, and these things do firmly connect with the world of drink and food. So in that regard, it's been a great honor. You know, New Orleans is a great city. We know that. We drink and food and music, these things, I always say, is a tapestry. It's all intertwined. And, you know, it's something that I'm very pleased and honored. What better place to talk about drink and food, really? And to talk to you here in New Orleans and all the folks that I also want to give a shout out. So many folks listen to the show on the podcast around the world. We're in more than 34 states now, I believe, more than 20 countries, all that here in the show. And I want to mention all of you and thank you as well, because obviously you have an interest in drink and food and you have an interest in New Orleans too, I'm guessing. And that means a lot to me to be able to be at least one of the voices out there that's able to do that again. Again, it is a great privilege to be able to do that. You know, we try and bridge gaps with these things. We try and talk about different things that are important. As we mentioned, hey, I want to educate you on the world of drink and food whenever I can, tell you something that's entertaining. We want to have a little bit of fun, good laugh. We taste on the show. That's always a lot of fun too. So it's not all heavy handed. That's what we try and bring you week in and week out here on the NOLA Drink Show. You know that I don't like listicles. Okay. I'm not going to tell you the top five places to go drink a Sazerac right now. That's not what I do on the show. You know that we try and go for long form interviews, get in depth with these things and all of that sort of thing. So it's definitely transformed from day one. It's not the same show it was a year ago, and that's great. I hope it always evolves. It's very much different than what I thought it was going to be, but it's better, I think, than what I thought it was going to be. And again, it's been a great honor for this past year being able to talk to you here on the NOLA Drink Show, and I hope to give you the same set of remarks a year from today. So friends, hey, yeah, great show coming up. Also, as I mentioned, just to run these last few interviews from Tales of the Cocktail, we're going to talk right after the break. If I remember right, we have Carlos Rios from Blue Nectar Tequila. And then after that, we're going to be talking to Han Sean of Hudson Whiskey, an independent producer. And then also John Cashman of Irish Whiskey. We're going to talk a little bit about what is Irish whiskey and how does it differ from other types of whiskey. So a lot of interesting stuff. We're going to take a little bit of break here at the bottom of the hour on the NOLA Drink Show. And we're going to be right back with those interviews. Friends, come on back.
Crunch Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you are. Yes, we are at Tales of the Cocktail 2017, and whenever you're listening to this, I'm not sure, because this will come out a little bit later after Tales is over, so you could be hearing this from me posthumously. I may not have survived Tales. It's actually could be my last record, but I'm pleased to be joined by Carlos Rios, my new old friend. Carlos, man, how you doing?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
It's really good to see you, man.
Likewise, man. Yeah, likewise.
Now you're with Blue Nectar Tequila, but let's reminisce here briefly, because you and I met a year ago, probably about a year ago today, guess, close, at Tales of the Cocktail, and we were just sort of hanging out at the Carousel Bar, man.
Yeah, so my girlfriend had just flown in, so her birthday's this week.
That's right,
And so I had flown her in, it was her first Tales. She's not in the business, she's in fashion. Hey, babe, if you're listening, hi. And happy birthday.
It'll be belated birthday.
Yeah, happy belated. And so she'd not ever been to the Carousel Bar. It was the first time. And I want to show her, you know, just kind of what it's about. Obviously, it's a staple. You've got to visit it at least. She didn't have a wristband. We were kind of not doing all the events with her. We're just more like a culinary tour and cocktail tour. Which, I mean, I've been here a couple of times at this point. I knew a little bit about it. And got to the bar, had some great cocktails with Marvin, right?
Yep, Marvin Allen there. So we're talking about the Carousel Bar at the Hotel Monteleone, very famous bar. And Marvin is a very famous bartender.
Yeah, and he was fantastic, just took great care of us. And we sat down next to you.
Yep.
And we were just started chatting it up. You were super friendly. And we just started having some drinks. I had tried Plantation Pineapple for the first time at the bar.
Oh, yeah, right. Plantation Rum Pineapple. Yeah.
Which was fantastic. I've had it multiple times. I'm from New York, so I've had it multiple times in New York since I've gone back. And we're just chatting it up, man. And we just kind of hit it off. You told me what you did. And then you just started, I think we just said, oh, we're looking for like a good place to have brunch. And then you just started like rattling off places to go. And I just, a flurry of thumbs just writing this stuff down. And I literally have it all written down. I got to show you for sure. Cause a lot of people have been to New Orleans since, and they've hit me up because they know that I've been here before. And I got to say, more than half of those places are places that you've sent me to.
Oh, that's great. That's a dangerous question to ask a New Orleanian, right? They're like, where should we go eat?
Yeah.
Let me tell you where I've been last night.
Right. Everybody's got an opinion, and that's what we did the whole trip. The way to do it is, you know, travel tip: just ask a local. You recommended Sylvain's,
which is where we are here today, recording. Yep,
which is where we're at, and it was fantastic. It was just super memorable. We had friends meet us. We had a shot of Fernet. I don't know if Marvin drinks, but I feel like he had one with us. He could have.
I think he did. I think he might have poured us a shot there, like a parting shot.
Yeah, I feel like we had a group shot, and that one put us over. Yeah. My girlfriend never had a shot of a Fernet until then.
I remember that now.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. So she was, you know, all sorts of happy. And then we walked over here and had the most amazing brunch. It was a fantastic experience. You taught us a little bit of the geography and the lay of the land beyond just where to eat and drink. So I remember it fondly. So when I found out that we were going to be on the show, we just dug through the archives and found a photo of us together. And it was like, Brian, dude, I feel like we've met before.
And you had photographic evidence. It was really funny, Carlos, because as I was telling you in an email, you know how these things work with a PR company, and a PR company arranges some of this stuff, as is the case here. And, you know, I'm with Tales of the Cocktail, you get this avalanche of information, right? And invitations and people that want to be on the show and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just sort of almost like automaton kind of going through, yeah, that sounds interesting, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then you send me that email and I'm like, no way.
Yeah.
No way. And absolutely, even if we don't talk, well, we're going to talk about the tequila, but I was going to say, hey, we'll just get together and shoot the breeze. Man,
it's just nice to see you again, right? Nice, we had a great time. It wasn't like some random, you know, you meet so many people down here, right? You do meet a lot of people. You take a lot of business cards back home, which is great. The networking bit of it is cool, but it's always much more fun when it's organic. And it was like just a very real experience, something that we've spoken about. We always remember it fondly, so it's really nice to sit down with you again.
Absolutely. Thank you, man. And just because we have to give a shout out to Glenn, because Glenn was there with
Glenn.
us, and Glenn has been brought
up,
along.
Buddy?
So it's radio, but Glenn is waving.
Yeah. No, he, and, you know, it's funny because we were just mentioned before we got on air. So my flight was delayed and yada, yada. So we hadn't even had a drink or anything. We just walked right over. And we were standing in front of the bar. I'm like, I think I need a shot, man. Like, I can't just like walk in here, you know, just dead New York sober. That's not the way to go.
right. So it's tails.
Shout out to Glenn for buying me a shot across the street. Appreciate you, buddy.
All right. Where'd you guys go and what shot did you do?
Oh, you know, name it. Do it.
Name
it.
Names. A shot of Milagro, yeah, tequila.
Blue Nectar's not available yet.
Yep. And where
shout
were you?
Shout out to Jaime from Milagro.
Yeah. And where'd you guys go?
Just across the street right here. Had a, what's the name of the place?
Was it Tableau right here, or Muriel's? Or?
Literally right on the corner.
Oh, this the little tourist
trap.
Yeah, a little tourist trap.
Okay. Yeah, awesome. And we knew that's what it was, but we just needed a shot of beer. That's all it is. That's a little amber, Beta Amber.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Welcome to New Orleans, man. Welcome back.
Thank you, brother.
Well, so yeah, absolutely, man. So let's, you gave me the good, you just said this. So there was the good news.
Yeah.
I'm seeing you. There was the bad news. The flight was delayed. The badder news.
The badder news.
That the tequila didn't quite make it.
It's on its way.
But then that's the gooder news. The gooder news.
Yeah.
So we're good there.
So I wanted to just make sure that we set aside some bottles of it. We've got four expressions. So you'll have enough to taste through for the next couple of days, months?
Yeah, my lovely wife Sylvia is sitting here, so with her here, it could go a little quicker.
Okay.
She doesn't have a mic. These are like, it's like, you know, crime when people don't have a microphone. You can just. So tell us, so it's Blue Nectar Tequila, Carlos, and what are the four expressions? Let's start there.
Great. So usually when you're talking about tequila, you start with a Blanco, silver. You age a little bit, it's a Reposado, you age a little bit longer. Añejo, if you've got a fourth expression, it's an extra Añejo generally. Maybe there's a Joven here and there, very rare. Blue Nectar is not like that. It's actually four completely different expressions, which I think is really interesting. It's gorgeous packaging. It's just very well-designed product, which sounds kind of inorganic, but in fact, it's not. So what you're talking about, what you're looking at is a triple distilled silver, which has been a finalist for Best Silver Tequila at the Ultimate Spirit Challenge. That's based out of New York. Mm-hmm. It's Picault's competition. It's won 94 points 2015 and 16. Finalist for Best Silver Tequila, triple distilled. But the other three expressions in the line are double distilled.
Okay.
Yeah, so which is a little different. So the triple distilled is triple distilled because it's a valley style tequila. So our double distilled Blanco is just a little bit too fiery. It's a little bit too hot. It's delicious, but it's a little distracting.
Okay.
So we triple distill it because, well, I mean, not that distilling more is necessarily better. You know, obviously, you know.
It rounds out the edges a little bit on it, right?
It can. It can. You know, the more you distill generally, the more flavor, you're going to lose some flavor.
Right.
But the trade-off is it's a little bit cleaner, and it's also just not as distracting the heat, but it's still got a lot of beautiful pepper, jalapeno notes on the tongue, green pepper, just kind of a little bit of chalk. Really fascinating, green mango, those sorts of notes, really lovely. It's interesting because when I first started with the brand, I didn't drink silver tequilas at all. I was more of a repo guy. And over time, I just kind of fell in love with the silver, and it's now kind of like my daily, like my go-to.
It's to me, always, Carlos, it's kind of when you look to tequila in general and like the quality of what's going on. I mean, going with the Blanco or the silver, you're not hiding, right? There's very little to hide behind there.
Exactly. Well, so my background wasn't in agave spirits prior. So my background was principally I would have been working in vodka for a while. I was a New York brand ambassador for Stoli. And then previously I'd done a lot of brand ambassador work for a couple of different whiskeys. I was a field manager for Dewars for a while. So it was mostly brown spirits.
Right.
My comfort zone was obviously brown spirit bit of agave. And then I sat down with a buddy of mine named George. I hope he hears this because he's awesome. He used to live in New York, and he worked for our distributor. And he was just a wealth of knowledge. And I said, if you could teach me what you know, I'd appreciate it. So his method was, let's go to bar.
I like that method. Step one. That's quality education right there.
Right. No books. No websites.
No.
Go to bar.
We're going to the bar.
Yeah. And we were working together a day, and we started probably at like maybe like 12. We hit a bar. And it was the one stop of the day. And we stayed at that bar. And he just worked me through a lineup of first tequilas and then mezcal. And then we tried a couple of agave spirits outside of that. And I realized very quickly that the way, if you're going to compare it all, really is with Blancos. Because like you said, you can't hide behind the aging, the barreling. Legally, you can't hide behind any additives, but who knows who's doing what nowadays.
Right.
Yeah, so I just kind of fell in love with the Blanco category, and I've been drinking it ever since. I love our age expressions. They're fantastic. They're very highly rated, and I drink them all the time. But generally, if it's on me, like in NOLA, I would be drinking right now Blue Nectar Silver Rocks.
Okay.
All day.
Yeah.
Refreshing.
I think that's a nice way to go with it is when we're talking. Well, Carlos, here's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more, man. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
All right, friends. Come on back to the NOLA Drink Show.
Cheers.
And in life, there's always love.
Hey, ladies. Are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickey Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul. It takes all that long.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and podcast land, wherever you are. Thanks for listening to the show, wherever you may be, and however you are hearing the show. As always, I do appreciate it. Chatting with my friend Carlos Rios, who is with Blue Nectar Tequila, and we reminisced a little bit about how Carlos and I met last year at Tales of the Cocktail. Carlos, let's talk about a little bit more about your background. You mentioned a little bit about how you got into what you were doing in the alcohol business. Where are you from, man, originally?
So I was actually born in Colombia. I came here when I was one. By here, I mean New York. I've been in New York ever since. Queens, mainly.
Mainly. Okay.
I'm a Queens kid.
Yeah.
You know, no hate on the airwaves, please. I know if any Brooklyn people are listening, it's a New York thing. I just had to throw it out there.
That's absolutely. You know, there are people out there that listen to the show, you all can fight about that here. People are just going to go, Yankee.
Yeah.
It's kind of irrelevant.
Doesn't matter. Right. Yeah, yeah. A Yankee, but not a Yankee fan.
Not a Yankee fan. No. See, that's a differentiation.
Ooh, Mets
we
fan.
Could talk baseball. You're a Mets fan. That's good. And then that actually helps you out in my book.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah. So. Cheers, man. Thanks. Yeah. So Queens kid, kind of raised and went to school in the city. I went to Queens College for economics. And as I was close to graduating, I was working at a bar. It was a nightclub actually downtown. And a buddy of mine was interviewing for this cool job. He was actually interviewing for a Remy Cointreau position. I'd never considered all these years. At that point, I'd been bartending almost 7 years.
Okay.
You know, before college, after college, that you could even have a job in the business. And when he told me about it, it just sounds so cool. I mean, it just sounds so interesting and vibrant. And, you know, I don't know. I got hooked. It was, so my thing was, all right, I'm either going to go into banking or booze, and it just didn't
you put it in those terms, that's a pretty easy choice, right. Man.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I jumped right in. I tried to find some marketing gigs, and my first real job was as a beer distributor, sales rep. And I jumped in, and I never looked back. It's been a great ride. Maybe 9 years in the business now. So,
after stepping out from behind the stick, then you're saying, yeah,
from behind the stick. Yeah. So 8 years prior to that, bartending, kind of all over, hotels, nightclubs. I mean, the last gig was a nightclub. Everybody knows the money's great, but it's a little boring. You know, it's just kind of monotonous. I guess it's not boring. Sorry, that's not the right word. It's monotonous.
Right. Right.
A lot of vodka cranberries.
Right. Slinging rum and cokes.
Slinging rum and cokes. But I worked some pretty dynamic bars prior to that. I got into the business. Like I said, I never looked back. It's just been a fun ride.
So you went from being a sales rep, and then you moved into, how did you move into brand representation and that sort of thing?
Well,
I mean, as far as, you know, from sales into being an ambassador.
I mean, it's a good, so the thing was, what fascinated me, why I realized I kind of wanted to jump into, was not just it being dynamic and it being about booze. When I was bartending, when it was slow, I was always reading the stories on the back of the bottles. A good bartender once told me to do so, and so that's what I did. And that kind of always fascinated me. And as a sales rep, when you're on the wholesale side, at least in New York sometimes, you're just inundated with brands that there's no attention to the stories, and you're just slinging, and you're just kind of order taking sometimes. I did my best not to be that, but at some level,
it's
kind of making
it impossible, right?
Yeah, it's almost impossible.
I mean, the turn has got to be quick and all that.
Yeah. And that was that got old fast. And so I tried to find a supplier side job because I felt like I could jump in. And I did, and it wasn't the right fit. It was a non-alc. I was working energy drink at the time. I'm not going to name the brand because I'm not throwing them under the bus. It was a great opportunity at the time. Mm-hmm. But I was working energy drink, and I'm like, oh, this is just as bad. This is sugar water with caffeine in it. Fantastic. great. fantastic. You know, I was experiencing anxiety and stuff when I realized, finally, I got into the booze biz, and I'm just like, oh, it was just caffeine. Over-caffeinated.
I was just
going to
say,
like,
was that
months.
Because you just had too many energy drinks, yeah. Right?
I was waking up every single day at 4 in the morning, every single day, like clockwork. And I'm like, what is wrong, man? And then I realized as soon as I quit, that was the issue. So I got into the booze biz, and I remember I did my first training in Scotch whiskey. As I said, I think I might have mentioned it was for doers.
Yep,
and
yep.
I was just enamored with it. I was fascinated by it. It was just, I picked up as many books as I could about it. It wasn't part of my job description, but I just loved it. And so I just kind of really decided never to do anything else, I think. I think I'm a lifer.
Yeah, awesome. So then from there, what got you into, and you mentioned dabbling before being with Blue Nectar.
Yeah.
How did you get into agave distillates then?
Yeah, so I was working for Stoli. Some of y'all may remember, Stoli went through a transition, William Grant & Son to Stoli Group USA.
Yep.
I was part of the team that went through that transition, and, you know, things happen. I was the Stoli brand one of two Stoli brand ambassadors for New York, and I kind of threw my all into the brand, and it happens. I mean, now we're just talking business side of it.
Sure.
It happens, and, programs get shut down, things transition, things change, and that's basically what happened, and I was offered at the same time. It was really perfect timing. I had a friend of mine post on Facebook, hey, is anybody interested in traveling the country talking about tequila?
Okay.
I was like
banking or booze. Yeah. Another one of those like easy.
As it turns out, I'm about to lose this job. They had given me 2 weeks, which was nice. They gave me a notice. I was about to be out of a job. And then I'd never worked. I mean, I'm Latin, right? So my family's Colombian. I had never worked in Latin spirits. And it's so dynamic. I loved cachaças. I didn't know that much about rum, but I knew I enjoyed them. Tequila was interesting to me, but I didn't know anything about it. And so when that opportunity came up, I ran and I went with it. So I got the gig as a regional brand ambassador. I was traveling the country doing consumer tastings, trade tastings, trainings, and it was fantastic. Hadn't launched in New York yet. There were only, I think, 7 markets at the time. And they knew I had a sales background, so they said, hey, would you be interested in opening up New York as well? And so I opened Blue Nectar in New York in August 2014.
Okay.
And I've been with it ever since. And then recently it went through a transition. It moved over to a company called Espiritus Group. I don't want to bore you with the details, but in effect.
That's right.
Yeah, I think.
Espiritus Group, yeah.
Well, I think the Brownsberry folk in listening will appreciate this. So I technically work for a company called Asparagus Group. We've got a portfolio of brands. We've got a bourbon called Corner Creek, which is a sleeper. Berenson German liqueurs, which are very well known in the mixology world. We've got a Blue Nectar tequila, which is my baby. Mm-hmm. And that company was actually formed out of the sale of Angel's Envy Bourbon. 2015.
Really? So yeah. Some stuff that got spun off from that?
Is yeah, that, in effect. Yeah. Okay. So that was sold, and then a new company was formed that year. And then Asparagus Group, the first brand that they picked up was Blue Nectar Tequila, and that was going on 2 years now that I've been with these guys.
Have you had a chance to, do you get down to Guadalajara and Jalisco?
Yeah, okay. Of course. Yeah. So we did it. I mean, it was fantastic. It was my first time with Blue Nectar. I've been to Mexico. I've been to Guadalajara, actually. I've been to Mexico City numerous times. I love the culture. I love the people. But to actually get kind of like the inner workings of a distillery, it's a different story.
Absolutely.
And the distillery is just tiny. It's owned by two stepbrothers. The distillery is called Tequila Selecto de Montitan. The NOM is 1459 for the agave heads out there. You can do a tequila.net search, and you're going to find maybe one or two brands that are available, I think, in Texas or the Southwest. But really, it's an unknown distillery owned by two half-brothers. And their kids, they make some really quality tequila. The brand in and of itself was started by a father and son team based out of Detroit that were gifting bottles of tequila as birthday gifts back and forth for years. They're 2 weeks apart on the calendar. And it just became a family tradition. And they had a connection. They said, you got to go visit the distillery. They were doing distillery tours, tequila tours, just basically
for fun,
for
tourism,
fun.
Yeah.
They were introduced to the distillery, and they fell in love with the product. It really is a farm distillery. You've got to go under this little bridge. You've got to transfer from the big bus to the little bus to get to it, because it's like it just can't go on that like tiny road.
Right.
The distillery every afternoon takes a break after lunch, and they play volleyball together. I got to play volleyball with these guys.
Cool.
It was just a fantastic experience. We went as a team, and it's funny because the day that the first time that we went together as a team, it was one of the brothers' birthdays, so we had like this entire day lined up for the rest of us. But it was a family birthday, so they were pouring us drinks. They had slaughtered cattle to make tacos.
Yo, sweet. Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
it was
absolutely.
Like a family party.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we started drinking with them, and before you know it, we were there all day long. We were there, I think we got there like at 10 in the morning. We probably left almost like at midnight, literally partying with the family all day long. It was fantastic. It was just such a nice experience. Jalisco is gorgeous. We've got, to visit La Capilla, which I'd been infatuated with and fascinated with the story of Don Javier over there. I don't know if you're
well,
familiar.
Unfortunately, we'll have to save that one for another time because we got to wrap this one up. But tell people real quick, where can we find Blue Nectar Tequila online?
Yeah, BlueNectarTequila.com.
Okay, great. We're going to catch up tomorrow at the tasting room, which people will hear this after, and we'll do some tasting and stuff. But buddy, it's good to see you, man.
Cheers, man. Brian, a pleasure.
Absolutely,
always.
Carlos. Thanks,
looking forward
man.
To it, man.
I'll see you tomorrow. And friends, thanks for tuning in. Come on back to the Noel Drink Show. We'll be right back.
To shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir, from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, And it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Tim McNally, welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Hey, WGSN and AM in New Orleans and in podcast interweb land, wherever you may be. Always appreciate you tuning into the show. As you know, we are covering Tales of the Cocktail 2017. And pleased to be joined by my next guest, Han Sean of Hudson Whiskey. We were just talking about, hey, it's day number two of Tales of the Cocktail. And Han, you and I are both still alive, man.
Hey, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
It is a marathon, not a sprint. Yeah, and I'm thinking I might already be on my second or third wind.
Hey, you know, you're looking good.
Yeah. Thank you.
But then again, you're backlit.
Yeah, so. I am backlit, and this is radio, man. This is radio, so I don't have to really look like anything, which is really wonderful. Well, Han, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
And, so you're with Hudson Whiskey.
Indeed.
And where are you from, man, originally?
I'm originally from Baltimore, but I've been in New York 15 years, and, you know, can't get enough of New Orleans. Not this time of year, but I still always happy to go back to New York.
So this is not your first time in New Orleans?
No. And in fact, this is, I guess, my fifth Tales of the Cocktail. You know, I love getting down here when it's not Tales of the Cocktail, where I can relax and go down to the Marigny and just dance in the street and have a good time and enjoy the food and the drink and the flavor, the culture, the music, everything New Orleans has to offer.
That's great. That was my next question. I always ask people, because if you know, many people I talk to, they've been here. This is the fifth Tales, sixth Tales, eighth Tales, whatever it is.
Sure enough.
But not necessarily visiting outside of Tales of the Cocktail, Mardi Gras, Jazz Fest. So it's
right. No. Yeah. I like to come down and be a civilian and also get the hell out of the French Quarter and not that there ain't much to love here, and we're sitting here in Sylvain, beautiful little restaurant. You know, there are so many charms that this area has to offer. And if I can, you know, sneak out into the Bywater or get uptown and, you know, there's so much. I always tell folks, if they're here for Tales of the Cocktail for the first time, get the hell out of the French Quarter at least one day, one night. Get out and explore a little bit. Be careful. Watch, you know, your back. But there's so much to see, so much to explore.
Always a lot. We always like to tell people here that if you come to visit, anytime that, and you know, hey, Bourbon Street has its place, but when somebody comes to visit for the first time, I will take them to Bourbon Street because they say, I want to go to Bourbon Street. And I'll say, that's
get it out of your system.
20 minutes. and then
indeed,
there we are. And there's a lot of other things going on. Same thing. If you've never been down here outside of Mardi Gras, if you're in this industry, never been outside of Tales of the Cocktail, come down, do some other stuff.
Without a doubt.
Han, tell us a little bit. How did you get involved in the whiskey business, man?
Basically, I needed a good excuse to tell my mom about why I was drinking whiskey every night.
I like that story.
No, the truth of the matter is I've been a whiskey nerd for a long time. It's something I've always adored. You know, I grew up with my grandfather making old fashions with rye whiskey and my folks enjoying Manhattans at happy hour.
And this was in Baltimore.
Yeah, indeed. Okay. Indeed. Yeah. Yep. And, you know, I don't need to tell you that over the last, say, 15 years and certainly the last 7 or 8 years, it's boomed even more. The classic cocktail renaissance, the bourbon boom that we're in the midst of now. I mean, whiskey's come roaring back along with all these great pre-prohibition cocktails and all, you know, the Sazeracs and the Vieux-Carrés, the things that people love here in New Orleans. But
the stuff that never went away here, but maybe went away elsewhere.
Exactly. It's something I've always enjoyed as well. And, you know, with in New York, of course, Tuttletown Distillery, Hudson Whiskey, was the very first distillery. Tuttletown Distillery was the first distillery in New York after Prohibition. And as someone who just adored whiskey and loved learning about it and loved kind of visiting distilleries, and you know, they were on my radar very early on, and I sort of watched their development, their trajectory, with a lot of interest and eventually admiration.
Now, was this just as an aficionado?
This was just as an enthusiast, absolutely, okay. As a civilian. You know, it was just, I was a fan first. And it was started by Brian Lee and Ralph Arenzo, and Ralph Arenzo basically brought his son, Gable, came back to start working for his dad, and he was the ambassador before me. And after doing it for a bunch of years, it was time for him to spend a little bit more time with his wife and get home, and he wanted to distill again and get off the road. And so I put up my hand and I said, hey, I'll go out and proselytize and spread the good love.
Yeah, so you that's an interesting trajectory to get into this then, right? Is that you didn't necessarily work in, you weren't a bartender before?
No.
Or anything?
No,
like
I mean,
that?
I've been behind a couple bars, but not like some of the folks, obviously, who are stalking the streets of the French Quarter here during Tales. I worked a couple bars when I was in college,
sure,
25 years ago, and I'm basically pulling drafts and pouring shots. And you know, I've been a barfly, but I was always on this side of the bar. I came in not from the hospitality side, but just as an enthusiast. And it is true that it's relatively rare. Most of my colleagues and peers were bartenders, or you know, maybe they were on the distributor side, yeah,
exactly,
of things,
right?
But you know, it's not unheard of, though. And increasingly, there is an entree, because it's over the last, say, 10 years with programs like Tales of the Cocktail, where an enthusiast, a nerd like myself, like yourself, I think, could, you know, find a role. And just, I was in training for a very long time without realizing it, because I was geeky about it. I read all the books. I went to the workshops. I went, you know, to you know, various kinds of events, just because I wanted to absorb it and I wanted to educate myself.
So you didn't realize that you were being indoctrinated to the diplomatic corps. Exactly. Went on, right? Right.
Yes, I was recruited. I was recruited.
NSA, here we come. Yeah, that very cool, very interesting. So let's do this, Han, because we're gonna taste some stuff. We'll have you back on the show, because I always find these the personal trajectories and the professional trajectories are always very interesting, and yours is very interesting.
Me too.
But we're going to talk a little bit about Hudson Whiskey.
Of course.
Tell me about the first one that we're tasting
so,
here.
So we begin here where we began, which is with our Hudson Baby Bourbon, the very first bourbon ever made in New York. So this is pot distilled all from a local corn grown right there in the Hudson Valley where we are, about 75 miles north of New York City as the crow flies, beautiful little agricultural area. And this is a 90% corn, 10% malted barley bourbon. Neither rye nor wheat in this, which is rare,
yeah,
right? Most bourbon mash bills are going to be a little bit of rye or a little bit of wheat, but never the twain shall meet. Usually,
right,
you know, rye for spice or wheat for kind of smooth and creamy.
Right.
This is our all corn bourbon, essentially, right? A little malted barley there for the enzymes to make the chemistry happen, to feed the yeast, to make the alcohol, yada, yada.
Little mouthfeel.
Indeed, yep. Sure. But the rest of it is just a nice, beautiful, local corn grown by folks we break bread with. I mean, these are farmers that we know and love, and we can go visit their farms and test the moisture content of the corn that we're working with and know what we're dealing with. And we pot distill it lovingly. We don't chill filter it. And so you should get nice kind of round, that mouthfeel, partly from the malted barley, but also from that proteins and fatty acids and nice oils that are still in there. Toffee, caramel.
Absolutely. Very, very nice. Very easy drinker.
Mm-hmm.
And I always hate, you know, and one of the things I always say, I hate to use hackneyed expressions like this. This is actually just, this would be nice, couple drops of water.
Oh, without a doubt. And in fact, I brought over this.
Well, thank you for that reason.
For exactly that.
All right, here we go. And keep telling us about this one while I have a sip.
Of course.
It's radio, so somebody's got to keep making noise.
Indeed. So, like I said, literally the very first bourbon made in New York, because pre-Prohibition in New York, we made a lot of rye whiskey. We made lots of Applejack, apple brandy, other kinds of brandy, eau de vie, but nobody made bourbon until we did. So the very first bourbon ever made in New York, because we were the first distillery in four generations when we started up a dozen years ago. Well, about 15 years ago now, it was a dozen years ago that we actually brought out Hudson Whiskey. We started out making some vodka from apple scraps. I mean, literally whatever we could find just to
that's mess what everybody
around.
Does, right?
Of course. You know, you got to start somewhere.
Right, exactly.
You know, we wanted to make whiskey, and we didn't really realize. Well, when I say we, I'm talking about Ralph and Brian, and you know, my heroes, really. I'm happy to call colleagues, but you know, they began as guys that I admired the work they were doing, being real pioneers in New York. They really kicked off a kind of renaissance in craft distilling and farm distilling in the Hudson Valley and in New York, and really across the country. I mean, we saw a handful of little craft distilleries back in the 80s, right? You got,
sure,
say, St. George up in Alameda. And
my neck of the woods, yeah, originally.
Indeed, yeah. And also Anchor Distilling, right? Fritz Maytag, your, sure, group at yep. St. George. A handful of little craft distilleries back in the 80s, but it was... There were very few and very far between.
Han, let's do this real quick.
Please.
Hold that thought. We're going to take a little break.
Certainly.
And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit more, taste a couple more things. We're going to talk a little bit more about craft distilling here in the United States and other good stuff. Friends, come on back to the NOLA Drink Show.
I'm going to need to parachute when I get through walking these blues. When I get back to New Orleans, I've got my suit. Kiss in my hand.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event, or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Frenchman right back again with that.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. We're at Tales of the Cocktail 2017. Whenever you're listening, I hope it's still 2017. It might even be 2018. We all backlog. But we are chatting with Han Shan, who is the ambassador for Hudson Whiskey. We just tasted their maple cask rye. Very lovely. And now we are moving. Oh, I'm sorry. We tasted. Okay, I got ahead of myself or behind myself. We tasted the baby bourbon whiskey. Thank you.
We'll get to the maple cask rye. That's going to be the finale.
There we go. Beautiful. So we tasted the baby bourbon whiskey. Thank you. That's what we were talking about. Get distracted here. And then now we are tasting the Hudson Manhattan rye whiskey. Interesting mash bill, and we were talking about the importance of corn just during the break here, Han. And like you said, people kind of gloss over corn as a placeholder when you make whiskey, and that doesn't do justice,
well,
meant to corn.
Bourbon by definition, of course, has to be 51% corn at least, right?
And so use good corn, right? Corn means something.
Well, yeah, but you'll talk to some distillers who will kind of act like the corn is just the blank canvas, and then it's the quote-unquote small grains, the rye or the wheat in the mash bill that gives it the flavor, and then, of course, the wood, right? But we respectfully disagree. We think that you can make a gorgeous whiskey like our baby bourbon that's literally 90% corn, just the remainder is nothing but malted barley, essentially for the enzymes, right, that help convert the starch to sugar to feed the yeast to make the alcohol.
We need the fermentation.
Yeah, you need that. But everything else is just a beautiful Hudson Valley corn. And we think the proof's in the pudding, right? You taste that. It tastes like what it's made of, and it's a gorgeous flavor.
Well, let's talk about, I mean, and just so people know, and I'm going to equate this in a way that is kind of accurate, kind of not accurate. You think about when you go to the grocery store, and during different times of year, you get, you know, you a few different varietals of corn, maybe.
Sure.
And then when things become ripe, things are not ripe, mm-hmm. and where they come from, there is a great diversity. So this is the way we need to look at this. Corn is as diverse as any other grain that we're talking about.
Anything that we're unfortunately, of course, yeah. the diversity of corn has plummeted over the last few decades.
That's a topic for another show.
Well, indeed. But part of what we try to do here, we use a little bit of a gorgeous heirloom corn called Wapsie Valley corn. That's an open pollinated, very rich, tasty, flavorful, basically old Indian corn. And that gives it a you know, part of that gorgeous corn flavor that we're looking for. And we pride ourselves in making whiskeys that taste like what they're made from. So moving on to our Manhattan rye whiskey, you know, rye is a beautiful grain with great peppery notes, really fun flavors. And of course, rye whiskey disappeared for all intents and purposes for decades here in this country. And of course, it was our original American whiskey. George Washington was the biggest rye whiskey distiller of his time. When he retired from the presidency, he went to Mount Vernon and distilled whiskey. And what was he making? He was making rye whiskey. Before we were drinking bourbon in this country, we were drinking rye. So that's another grain it's beautiful to see this kind of rye revival that we've seen with the classic cocktails, the Sazeracs, the Vucarays, the Manhattans, the Old Fashions that originally were made with rye whiskey. That kind of cocktail renaissance has meant a rye revival, and that's a beautiful thing. And this is our kind of entry into the category, our Manhattan rye, called Manhattan rye, and partly just to, you know, lay claim to our New York heritage, and partly to remind
not
people
that anybody's growing rye in Manhattan these days. Maybe on a rooftop or two, possibly
not in Manhattan. But
there's those rooftop gardens that are going on. Who knows what's going on?
Indeed, I don't know how well rye would do up there. But
there's somebody trying it. Well, this is all grown somewhere
in the Hudson Valley, around a corner from our distillery. But that rye flavor that you get right up front, you'll know you're drinking rye whiskey. That cracked pepper spice. Those kind of baking spice notes,
without
absolutely, right? Yeah. And of course, we also called it Manhattan Rye to remind people, if you're going to make the most famous New York cocktail of them all, first of all, use a New York whiskey, please. But please make it with rye, because the rye has the spice to come through against the vermouth, sweet vermouth and bitters, and still tastes like a whiskey cocktail.
Now that's one of those drinks, and we're not necessarily meant to talk about this today, but that's one of those drinks where people go, oh, Manhattan. If we understand the original concept of that drink, that is a fantastic drink.
Oh, yeah.
And for our listeners that are local listeners, we have a lot of non-local listeners. You know, you think about a Sazerac, this sort of thing. A proper Manhattan is a proper drink.
You have to make it right. And if it doesn't have bitters, it's not a Manhattan.
Exactly.
So, without a doubt. Now, my mom likes her bourbon Manhattan. She likes them a little sweet, and that's fine.
And how do you feel about this? Because one of the things that I actually will tell people when they're being introduced to this part of the world, coming down here, or people that are from here, and you taste them on a Manhattan, actually split the difference and do a half bourbon, half Manhattan.
Sure enough. Ain't nothing wrong with that. Or use a bourbon with a high rye content, right?
Yep,
there you go. Because most bourbons are going to have a little bit of rye in the mash bill alongside the corn.
Yep.
But we love our New York Manhattans, which sounds ridiculous, but that's what I like to make. That's what I call a Manhattan made with our Manhattan rye. 3-to-1 with sweet vermouth and a couple dashes of aromatic bitters every time. Orange twist.
So let's name names, because one of the things about with that drink also to me, which is very important in a Manhattan, if you, as opposed to sort of a mass produced Manhattan, using a sweet vermouth that is not cloyingly sweet is also very important to me.
Sure.
In that drink.
Sure.
So I would prefer something like a Carpano Antica.
Lovely.
Would be a nice choice in that.
Gorgeous.
It's going to show this better, right?
Without a doubt.
That's too medicinal, too thick, and too viscous. and I won't name names in that way.
Sure.
You're doing a it's same thing like a
Carpano Antica has a ton of vanilla, so that will come through in a big way. And if that's not what you're looking for,
touch of vegetal.
Coqui Torino is another one that I think is gorgeous. Has kind of an earthy quality that marries just beautifully with
Dolan Rouge would be another one that
without
I would go
a doubt. And frankly, yeah. I think that there are some of the better known, but maybe a little bit more bottom shelf vermouths out there that will work just fine. But you got to tinker with it. Maybe you add a couple more dashes of bitters to balance it out. Maybe you
back
use a little less.
Yes, exactly.
And add a little bit more rye whiskey. Maybe that's a 4-to-1. It's a little drier. But some people really like that classic 2-to-1. You know, with a good bit of vermouth. Kind of Manhattan.
That's always an important part of these drinks, right? Is that
sure? But that's when I'm going to use a nice dry vermouth that's a little bit more herbal and earthy and the kind of
more
vermouth that you drink on its own on the rocks with just a lemon twist.
Absolutely.
As a nice aperitif in the afternoon.
I always want not to get too far away, but like just the choice of vermouth.
We're
is
talking
not
vermouth an, here. I thought we were talking whiskey, but
it's like corn. It's not an afterthought.
No. Right? Not so if you're making Manhattans.
All right. So let's do the next one because we got 2 minutes left. But we're educating our audience here, man.
Indeed, I hope so. So. Moving on from our Manhattan rye to our maple cask rye. So we're going to have another rye, and this is not a maple-flavored whiskey. This is a maple-finished whiskey. Now, what does that mean? Basically, we lend our bourbon barrels, freshly dumped, to a maple tapper in Vermont who makes a gorgeous bourbon barrel-aged maple syrup. A guy named Albie Wood, believe it or not. His last name is Wood, and he's making maple syrup.
No.
You can't make this stuff up.
Okay, you can't make that stuff
up. He makes a gorgeous... bourbon barrel aged maple syrup with our barrels, and then he
had a calling in life.
Indeed,
go on. Sorry,
4 generations. But he sends them back, and we put our select barrels of our mature rye whiskey into those maple syrup cured casks for another 3 months. So that's what I mean by finish, and it just adds a hint of maple roundness, earthiness. It's only subtly sweet, right? We're starting with a rye whiskey, right? We already have that spice, and a proper rye should have be kind of rough around the edges and kind of
still
rustic. But
and
the maple kind of rounds that out, gives it a polish, just smooths it out. And again, it doesn't taste like Aunt Jemima or log cabin.
Where I pick it up is I pick it up in the mid palate, mm-hmm. So it actually adds some viscosity to it. Mm-hmm. I still get the baking spices at the end. I still get that nice rye burn.
Absolutely.
At the end. So the maple note actually. If you went too cloyingly sweet, the maple note would hang through and mess up the finish.
Indeed.
And actually, I get that.
And it's more like a rye whiskey for a bourbon lover, with that maple kind of adding a hint of sweetness and taking the edge off a bit. But it's still a rye whiskey, right?
Yeah. I get a touch of a honey note, almost an Amaro-esque honey note on this. It's very interesting. Also, very nice.
Yeah, yeah. So we, this is a seasonal release, basically. Comes out every fall now for the last 4 years.
Okay.
Only a seasonal release based on the rhythm that we enjoy with the maple tapper, Al Wood. When we get the barrels back from him, and of course he wants the barrels during tapping season, end of March, very beginning of April, because he fills the barrels right off the evaporator with boiling hot maple syrup, so it penetrates the wood. He lays them down for a month. When he sends them back, we put our whiskey in. 3 more months, comes out every fall. And it's kind of perfect, right, that a maple cask rye would come out in the fall.
Makes sense.
It's got those fall flavors. You add a couple drops of aromatic bitters, and it's Christmas in a glass.
Beautiful. Do me a favor. We got about 15 seconds left. Tell us where people can find Whiskey online, man.
HudsonWhiskey.com. On all of the interwebs, the social
interwebs.
Media platforms, it's pretty much Hudson Whiskey. Just make sure you have that E in the whiskey. It is an American whiskey. So Hudson Whiskey on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, all that good stuff. And, of course, HudsonWhiskey.com. And, come see us at Tuttletown Distillery in Gardner, New York.
We'll do so. Han, thank you so much. Hey, and friends, when this airs, we will let you know. We will put all this up on our social media where we will make sure we put the E in the whiskey for you. Friends, come on back to the Nola Drink Show.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
The French Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our six-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music. Enjoy a muffaletta, po' boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmer's market. Check out our pop-up farmer's markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you on WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in the podcast interwebs, wherever on planet Earth you may be listening to the show. Thank you very much for tuning in today or whenever you're listening tonight. Who knows? And yeah, great. We are here at Tales of the Cocktail 2017, as you know, and we're doing all kinds of fun stuff all week. Today is the first day for us. You're hearing this a little bit down the road, but hey, that's how we're doing this. So hey, that's how it works. I'll let you do the math and figure out when you're listening to the show and when Tales of the Cocktail was. Pleased to be joined by John Cashman, who is the global brand ambassador for Irish whiskey and here in town for Tales. John, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure, Brian. It's delighted to be here.
Thank you so much. It's great. Is this the first time for you at Tales?
No, I was here previously about 3 years ago, and then I was here a year prior to that as well. So this is my third time at Tales. Great event. Coming back.
Great. And how about had you been to New Orleans prior to that?
Never. No. So it was all new to me. Thankfully I've managed to get a little bit of time and have a look around and do a bit of tourist stuff, so it's good.
Good. When did you get into town, John?
I came in on Saturday, that was 3 days ago. I had Sunday to myself and then started work yesterday doing some training some of our internal staff.
Oh, great. Mm. So this provides an opportunity to get people together from disparate places than here at Tales, and you guys get together and do some work.
Yeah, absolutely. It gives me a great opportunity to get in front of some of our US-based salespeople. And then also we have our other ambassadors from different, maybe Scotch ambassador, Canadian ambassador, American ambassadors all coming together. So it's a good opportunity to trade stories as well.
And I bet you guys get a lot of war stories out there.
There can be a few, I don't know if I can tell you them all now.
I was just thinking I won't ask you. We'll talk about that during the break. You can share those with me. You know, it's well, fair enough. So you are with Beam Suntory, just so we're being correct here. And how long have you been with the company?
I suppose the background is I'm Beam Suntory now 4 years, but these particular Irish brands that I represent, I've been involved with them for over 11 years because we were a small independent Irish distillery. And then 4 years ago, we were purchased by Jim Beam. And then Beam 2 years ago were purchased by Suntory. So now within the organization, I'm the global brand ambassador for Irish whiskey. So responsible, essentially the brains and voice of Irish whiskey for the company.
Great. And then, and you have other Irish whiskeys then in the portfolio, I assume?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Kilbeggan being one. We also have Tyrconnell, a single malt, and we have Connemara, which is a peated malt. It's actually the only peated single malt in Ireland.
That's very interesting. I think we can probably guess where you're from, but where specifically are you from?
I'm from a little place called Rathdrum, which is in County Wicklow. Now, County Wicklow is known as the Garden of Ireland, a beautiful area. We're about 30 miles south of Dublin on the east coast.
And how did you find yourself into the whiskey world, John?
I suppose it was by sheer luck, to be honest. I studied in university. I studied a very general degree of languages, law, history, and politics. It's called European Studies. So I studied
Spanish.
Sounds
like me. It means you're good at Trivial Pursuit.
Yeah, right? Pretty much. Yeah. Pub quizzes are one of my specialities, especially the whiskey questions. I left that, and just by chance, I applied for a graduate scheme, and I was picked up by Jemison. And Jemison took me on and sent me over to Denmark to launch their range of Irish whiskies over there. So I spent 2 years in Copenhagen selling the Pernod Ricard portfolio of Irish whiskey.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah. Not a family history necessarily, is something you sort of found your way into?
No, I mean, in Ireland, you're never too far from whiskey.
That was probably a silly question now that I really think about it. So it's either direct involvement or indirect or something like that. Yeah, great.
Though I remember as a child, I remember my grandfather always had, there were bottles of whiskey in his house. And I remember seeing them. I probably first tasted whiskey, you know, quite young, you know, when a toothache or something like that. Probably my grandmother or grandfather.
Little finger rub, absolutely.
Yeah. Or then there was always, you know, a hot whiskey, like a hot toddy.
Doing a toddy.
Yeah, cures all ailments in Ireland. You know,
absolutely. I like it, and not just in Ireland. I think I'm a firm believer.
My grandmother was the best. She was a pioneer. God rest her. Which means she never touched alcohol. She's very Catholic. Go to mass every morning, but she'd never touch alcohol. But whenever she felt poorly or felt ill, she would always have a hot whiskey because she didn't see it. It was purely medicinal. It wasn't alcohol. And you know, when you're growing up and you're quite young, there's a lot of things you don't actually notice and realize until you're a little bit older. And now I look back at it, I always wondered why Granny was sick every day of the week. But now I have an idea what was going on.
I kind of had a feeling you were going there, but I wasn't going to say anything. I'm not feeling quite right today. Well, John, do me a favor. Tell people... let's differentiate a little bit. What is Irish whiskey by definition? I think people know the broader whiskey world, but what does it mean to be Irish whiskey?
Okay. There are a lot of misconceptions about Irish whiskey out there. And they were basically put forward by a few small companies, because the Irish whiskey industry in the 19th century was the biggest whiskey industry in the world, all the way up until maybe the 1920s. Prohibition was one of the last nails in the coffin for Irish whiskey, unfortunately. But there were a lot of other things as well. I mean, Irish whiskey pre-prohibition was the biggest segment here in the United States of America. And then when prohibition started, we were at war with Britain at the time. We were getting our own independence. We weren't able to ship stuff over here. So a vacuum was caused, which was filled by, you know, illegal liquid being passed off as Irish. So Irish got a very bad reputation. And then from the 1960s until 1989, there was only one company producing Irish whiskey. And they produced it a certain way. So because they had it all to themselves, they basically retrained people into believing that Irish whiskey was a certain thing. Now, for a whiskey to be produced in Ireland, really the rules are very similar to in Scotland or other whiskey producing countries. It has to be a mash of a cereal, a diastase based cereal. Now, diastase is this little enzyme that converts starch into sugar. The whiskey has to be distilled and matured on the island of Ireland for maturation. It has to be in wooden barrels, not necessarily oak, oak being an example of the wood, mm-hmm. for no less than 3 years. And that's basically it. There's no mention of distillation. There's no mention of how many times you should distill, which is one of the big misconceptions.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, because
and not a specific mention of what can be in the mash bill then either,
no,
I'm assuming.
Okay. No. Just a diastase-based cereal. Mm-hmm. So barley has diastase, and once you have a lot of malted barley or unmalted barley, that can convert wheat, that can convert rye, that can convert oats, that can convert whatever other cereals you want. So, you know, the misconception is Irish whiskey has to be triple distilled. Does not have to be triple distilled. It can be distilled once, twice, three times, four times if you want. Mm-hmm. Nobody distills four times, nobody distills once. We distill twice. All the whiskeys under our portfolio are two times or double distilled. The other big misconception about Irish whiskey is a lot of people think Irish whiskey, well, it's different from Scotch because, well, they don't use smoke in Ireland. They don't use peat. Well, 1/6 of the landmass of Ireland is peat. And peat was always used in the whiskey making process. It's just the surviving whiskies. We're all on the east coast of Ireland. They were able to import anthracite or smokeless fuel more cheaply than getting peat. So the idea of peat died out. And we brought it back with our Connemara brand, which is a, you know, a smoky whiskey. And the other big misconception is the spelling. Irish whiskey is W-H-I-S-K-E-Y. Scotch whiskey is W-H-I-S-K-Y. Now, again, there's nothing in the rules saying Irish whiskey has to be K-E-Y. In fact, some of the brands from 100 years ago were K-Y. So again, there's you know, it's these are just, yeah, misconceptions that have come into the, I suppose, the lexicon of whiskey. The question when I'm asked, what is the difference between Irish and Scotch? And without being facetious, I say, one is made in Ireland, one is made in Scotland.
Right, there.
And that's the difference.
And you can't go wrong with that answer.
But that's enough of a difference to make it important because it's climate.
It's terroir, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's a common theme, actually, John, on the show. We've been, and I don't know what segments are going to air exactly when, but we've been talking a little bit about Pisco, tequila, all these other things. And I do always want to have people understand that when we're talking about spirits, just like we talk about wine, terroir is mm-hmm. actually, it's a big deal.
Oh, it's huge. Absolutely huge. And Ireland is a relatively small country and we have a very moderate climate, you know. Today in New Orleans, which I suppose was a relatively mild day temperature-wise, if this was Ireland, this would be the hottest day of the year.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Right.
But on the flip side, it falls below freezing. Maybe 5 occasions on the 3rd week of January at 4 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
So we don't have extremes. And that means when whiskey is maturing in Ireland, it's maturing at a more mild and mellow pace, which essentially results in a much lighter, softer, more mild and mellow, easy drinking, smooth style of whiskey. That is the secret.
Let's do this, John, real quick. Let's take a quick break here mm-hmm. and we're going to come back and we're going to taste a little bit of whiskey. Friends, come on back to the NOLA Drink Show. Oh, nobody's brown.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bageau heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Let's go.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Nola Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. And yes, we are talking a little bit of Irish whiskey with John Cashman, who is the global brand ambassador for all things Irish whiskey for Beam Suntory. And once again, celebrity walk. I shouldn't say once again because I don't know when this is going to air, but Teddy Blumenthal, general manager of here at Sylvain, celebrity walk-on. Thanks for being here, man.
Absolutely. Thanks
and
for having us.
Absolutely, and thanks for hosting. John, we were talking a little bit before we took the break about the you know, I like what you said, what's the difference between Irish whiskey and Scotch, and one is made in Ireland and one is made in Scotland.
Correct.
That is a truism if I've ever heard one, so I really do like that. But we're you've brought a really nice one for us today, so Kilbeggan, it's a new one, right?
Yeah, Kilbeggan has a long and proud history with Irish whiskey. In fact, the Kilbeggan Distillery is the oldest licensed distillery in Ireland. It first got a license to distill in 1757. Now, like Irish whiskey in the history of Irish whiskey, it went through good times and it went through bad times. But for us, it's been a great brand that we resurrected about 30 years ago. And just this week, now we are launching the latest addition to the Kilbeggan family, and that is this single grain Irish whiskey.
And you mentioned this during the break, that is actually something that is a little less common in Irish whiskey, is going single grain.
Yeah. Irish whiskey always traditionally was pot still distilled, like in Scotland. And the first Irish whiskies would have been very much malts. And then due to the British imposing a malt tax on Ireland in the 1800s, the Irish started using less malt and throwing in any other cereal into it, and the idea of an Irish pot still whiskey began. And then an Irishman called Aeneas Coffey invented a new way of producing whiskey, and that was called the coffee still, which became known as the continuous still, or in Ireland it was known as the silent still, because the Irish distillers in general refused to embrace it because it was too efficient. It produced a liquid that didn't have the flavor profile. It didn't have the intensity that they wanted from the pot stills. So they generally refused to embrace it. Now, in Scotland, they did, because Scottish malt up until then was nasty compared to Irish. It was much more intense, and they couldn't sell it because Irish whiskey is so much lighter and softer. But they realized if they used this continuous still, producing this lighter style of spirit, and blended it with their malt whiskey, all of a sudden they had something more close to Irish in style.
Interesting.
So the majority of Irish distillers refused to use this continuous still. Now, then, you know, our industry was practically destroyed, and today the majority of Irish whiskies have continuous still element in it, you know, have column still, and have grain elements in it. All blended whiskies have grain whiskey. So we were producing grain whiskey for our blend, for our standard Kilbeggan original. And we realized that the liquid that we were producing was so good, it'd be a shame just to hide it in the blend the whole time. So we started maturing it that little bit longer, and then we started putting different barrels, putting into maybe a sherry cask or a Pedro Ximenez cask or even virgin oak. And let's get these liquids, bring them together, and see what it's like. And this is the result of that. And it's a beautiful, quite a complex whiskey, but very soft, very easy drinking.
It's very round around the edges, like we were talking about when we took a sip during the break, and very approachable. Teddy, what do you think?
Yeah, it's almost got an added viscosity to it, which I, you know, can't tell how physical that is. I mean, it does seem to stick to the rim, the size of the glass here, a little bit more than your average whiskey, and I don't know if that's just an alcohol content result or result of the, which I know you said it's 43%, so a little bit higher.
A little bit higher.
But you know, it does have this very kind of fruit-forward apricot peach flavor to it that maybe almost creates the impression of that thicker, jammy
It's interesting because when you mention the word viscosity, and not from the flavor profile, maybe stretch of the imagination, but from the viscosity standpoint or mouthfeel standpoint, it almost reminds me of bourbon.
Yeah.
Which, you know, in the mid-palate especially, where I kind of get that stickiness on the mid-palate, that's as opposed to something that I would assume otherwise.
Yeah. It's, well, in, we'll say, the mash bill, if we use that term, it's 94% corn with 6% malted barley.
Okay.
Now, the corn we use is comes from France because Ireland doesn't have the climate to grow corn to the quality that we require for making this whiskey. So it is essentially, if you want to use the term, a corn-based whiskey. and then it has been distilled in the column stills. So that sweetness is exactly what you're talking about, what you're used to. Now, the viscosity and the oiliness is coming through from the use of many different types of barrels. As I said, there is some virgin oak in this, but then there's also, you know, reused bourbon barrels. So we get all of our barrels from Jim Beam.
That makes sense.
And we reuse them maybe first or second time. But we also have some of those fortified wine casks, and that's where you're getting your those fruit flavors, you know, the spices, some of those dark fruits, maybe even, you know, like a fruitcake, some of that element coming through.
Sure. When you guys are using the sherry casks or the Pedro Jimenez casks, are you guys using the large format, the butts, or are you using...
We will use some butts. Yeah, definitely, definitely. And then sometimes not with this whiskey, but we have other, some of our malt whiskeys have also gone into port pipes, which are even larger again, barrels, you know. So all we're looking for is to get an essence of whatever was in that barrel previously. We don't want it to take over. We want the flavor of the spirit itself to come true, the flavor of the whiskey to come true. You know, I've been fortunate in my career to have tasted many, many different whiskies, and I don't believe there's such a thing as a bad whiskey. But having said that, the only bad whiskies I've ever tasted have been ones where the barrel has completely taken over. Call me, you know, a naive, or call me an old-fashioned guy. I like my whiskey to taste of whiskey. Mm-hmm. I don't want my whiskey to be all about Pedro Jimenez or all about sherry or all about whatever barrel you're using, you know?
You want the accent from the vessel. And for listeners out there, that if you're not a whiskey drinker, if you're a wine drinker, this is going to make sense. Also, if you over-oak any wine, you've basically done a disservice to the fruit, and you can... You know, you can mask a lot of things. Frankly, you can mask a lot of things.
You can hide bad spirit in a barrel.
Bad spirits in a barrel. Absolutely. Well, John, do me a favor. Tell us a little bit. We're here for Tales, as we mentioned. Yeah. What are you all up to? People will be hearing this after Tales is over, so we can speak, as we were talking about, during the past, future, present thing. So feel free to conjugate however you want.
We're here for the launch of this Kilbeggan Single Grain Irish Whiskey. So we have essentially the world premiere is happening here at Tales. We're having a large event on Wednesday of Tales Week in the afternoon, and we've invited people, and the two of you, more than welcome, please come along. If you have the time, where we're introducing this whiskey to the great people here in New Orleans. And then in due course, it will be available here in the market as well as worldwide. It is going to be one of our key brands going forward. And we really are expecting great things from this whiskey, because it's a great whiskey. It's a really, really good whiskey.
It's very nice. So I can tell that, I mean, we're very excited about this. It's great. And so I appreciate you giving us a little bit of a pre. So we're pre-world premiere preview.
Yes, you're probably one of only 10 people in the world who have tried it so far.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I feel, oh, thank you
here
very much.
Here in the distant past, a taste of the future.
Yeah, indeed. I'm, okay, yes. Well, that's great, John. Thank you for, and with some of the other, so this is the focus while you're here at Tales. Are you guys,
absolutely.
You guys, with Beam Suntory, you have other stuff going on, though, right?
We do. We have a lot of different events going on. We have a large, big portfolio event on Thursday afternoon, where it's essentially all of our whiskeys, I believe. So people are coming in, and we'll be led around and trying lots of different things. And at that event, and this is going out afterwards, so unfortunately, listeners, unless you've already heard about it, you'll be missing out. I've brought some special stuff over with me, so some liquids that are not available here in the United States. So I'll be sampling those on Thursday, which I'm looking forward to seeing what people think of them.
I think I'll try and be there.
You're more than welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Teddy will go. Sounds good. John, thank you so much for taking time. I really appreciate it.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Pleasure with you.
Yeah, good.
Thank you, and thank you, Teddy. All right, friends. Hey, just a quick closeout here from the studio. Hope you enjoyed those interviews. As I mentioned, we got one more segment from Tales of the Cocktail. You're probably tired of hearing all that stuff, but lots of interesting stuff, and we'll run that either next week or week after, and then we'll be back with a new show, as we always are, next week. Friends, thanks for tuning in. Remember to help our neighbors with the damage from Hurricane Harvey. It's going to be a long road to recovery. Go to our Facebook page, NOLA Drinks. You're going to find all kinds of ways that you can help out. Here, if you're listening in New Orleans, it's time we pay it back. We owe that area a great debt from Hurricane Katrina, and I know we're going to show them every bit as much love as they showed us. So until next week, friends, take care of yourselves, and until then, cheers, y'all.